Blog Talk Radio.
Everybody, this is Chris.
And this is Beth.
We're coming to you live from Richmond Historic Haunts corporate headquarters up here in beautiful Churchill on this chilly November evening. Sitting here in the makeshift office, if you will. We have a fire going in the fireplace. Got some Christmas lights up already, and have a very happy curled up kitty cat here on a fuzzy blanket. So the whole crew is here and ready to go for this evening. Appreciate y'all tuning in on this.
I hope they're not turning in already.
Turning in, yeah, please. Tuning in with us here on this Thanksgiving week, and man, it has been a very, very busy month.
Where did November go?
Well, it's gone. Did it start? I don't know.
We've been so busy since Halloween and October,
which isn't supposed to happen. Like we run ghost tours. October's crazy. Then November is...
We should be slowing down, and we didn't slow down.
We didn't. Until this last weekend. It finally did start to slow down a little bit. Just with at least like the number of people showing up on tours. But we seem to be constantly signing ourselves up for more things to do. And yeah.
We got to learn to say no.
But we don't want to.
This is true. This is our livelihood.
Yes. Well, it's our livelihood, and we'll... The other stuff, we like doing it.
Yes,
the community stuff.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I'm on the Churchill Association Board of Directors now. Ooh.
You got voted in this past week.
Because I didn't have enough things to do already. So, yeah, congratulations to me on that. I think I have no idea what I signed myself up for. We will see. But, yeah, let's see, since the last time we talked, we finished October.
Yep.
We talked about Sleepy Hollow last month.
Yes, we did.
And
and all the headless people in Virginia.
Yes, she did.
a lot of headless people.
Then we had a lot of fun on Halloween, as we always do, despite the fact that
it was stormy.
The nasty storm rolled through. We just had one tour lined up for that night, which we're very thankful for in hindsight. Our friends at Patrick Henry Pub and Grill, they stuck inside and tell some stories inside once the storm really rolled in that evening. So actually wound up having a lot of fun that night. Got the stories in, a few stories inside. In outside, a few stories in inside, and wound up being a lovely night. And since then, it's just been a rolling, busy month for us. We've kept the tours going all month long. We've got one more weekend this next weekend that we're going to be running tours before we finally go ahead and take a little bit of a break for ourselves.
Because we need some downtime.
Yes. So we're looking forward to the Thanksgiving holiday. And, we checked out Hamilton this month.
Oh, yeah, that was a lot of fun.
Yeah, had a lot of fun there. We went over and caught that. And, just keeping on our toes, having fun where we can, being busy, just generally always being busy. Always busy. Busy. But, looking forward to the Thanksgiving holiday this week. My day job, I just have a 3-day work week this week, and then I get Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. So a nice long weekend ahead.
Get 3 days.
To go ahead and eat plenty of turkey and the fixins, and just going to be us this year, hanging out here on Thanksgiving Day. We'll probably have some friends over the day after, but...
You know, Friendsgiving leftover party.
Yeah.
Because, yeah, leftovers.
But it gives us a little bit of time to get up to scratch on our tour that's going to be running this weekend now.
Yep.
Yeah, we're one of our newer history tours. We got that running this weekend. So if you want to get out on Saturday afternoon and kind of put the Thanksgiving leftovers on hold, you can join us for our history of brewing tour this Saturday. We're going to be doing it in Shaco Bottom, Shaco Slip area. And that's available through the History Tour Company, Richmond Historic Haunts. $40 will get you a 2 to 3 hour tour with us, and as we share some interesting facts about brewing in Richmond since the founding of the city. So we'll be doing that afternoon.
You get drinks at each of the three locations.
Yes, of course, very important. $40 would be a bit much if we were just talking. But, you get three drinks. We got three stops, and you'll get a drink at each stop. So, yes, it does include the drink tickets as well. And that's richmondhistorichaunts.com. Other than that, we got ghost tours running Wednesday, Friday, and Saturday evening.
Yep.
So, and those will be the last three for a couple of weeks at least.
Mm-hmm.
We're not going to be running anything for the first weekend of December. And December is going to be a slow month for us. So, but anyways, I keep talking about Thanksgiving. I keep talking myself in circles. We got some stories to share with you all this month about people hitting the road for Thanksgiving. And when you hit the road, you know, family's getting together, you're going to see friends or whatever the case may be. But oftentimes, if you're, say you're going to grandma's house and she has an extra bedroom, well, one extra bedroom might not be enough if you're having the whole family of 20 people over or something like that. So,
like in my family where we kept all coming and then we just kept shrinking houses. it don't fit no more.
Yeah, so a lot of people wind up staying in hotels over this holiday weekend, and we have some stories of some haunted hotels here, not just in Richmond, but also across the state of Virginia to share with you tonight. So
we're actually going to start with Hanover Tavern because we were actually just at an investigation.
So let's
talk about the investigation first.
One of the other many busy things. What was it, the first, second Saturday? Second Saturday in November.
Oh, the month, yeah.
Yes. Yeah. Second Saturday of the month, we, I think, I don't know, time means nothing anymore. It was a Saturday night this month. We went up and hung out with our friends at Transcend Paranormal, and we helped, you know, tag along and help them host an investigation of the Hanover Tavern and Hanover Courthouse buildings.
Yes. So we were at the library, we were at the courthouse, we were at the old jail, and we were in the tavern. So it was quite an interesting thing. I think they broke us into four groups.
Yes, four groups. And had a fantastic evening up there doing some paranormal investigations with them.
So if you've never been up there, definitely get a chance to go. Great food, either down in the pub or up in the restaurant. And you can also go and see theater there as well. They have a very small pub-style theater.
Barksdale, right?
Barksdale, but now Virginia Rep.
Oh, okay. All right.
But it was originally the location for the Barksdale Theater. And almost every room there is haunted in the tavern. The theater has a ghost that likes to hang out in one of the seats. As you first enter the theater, it's in the audience right section near the front. People always report feeling rather chilly in that seat, or a feeling of unease, like they're not supposed to be there. Personally, if I was a ghost and you were sitting on me, I'd make you feel uncomfortable too. It's kind of rude.
Now, it has every reason to be haunted up there. I mean,
oh, yeah.
The place, the original building there, it's changed quite a bit over the years, but the original building dates back all the way to like the 1720s.
Yeah.
So
1727, I think it's when it became a tavern boarding house.
Yeah, it was originally just a private home that was converted into a boarding house, I think, right?
I think so.
And of course, the most famous person that ever lived there was Mr. Patrick Henry himself, mm-hmm. one of our favorite
founding fathers
to talk about.
Yep.
He was there for several years. It was mm-hmm. his father-in-law that actually owned the place for a stretch. And
after he failed at a farming venture, he went and worked actually as a host at the tavern while he was studying law.
Yep.
And so he lived there for quite a while. And then, you know, as things happen, buildings go up for sale and other families move in. And so we had several other families move in. There also have been very notable people who have stayed there, including the Marquis de Lafayette and Washington. They both have recorded in their journals staying there three times. Cornwallis stayed there begrudgingly, a guest of the owner. He was not happy about having to host that one. there have been many others who have gone through that area and stayed there, and that leaves a lot of imprints of energy and people who maybe have decided not to, not to go elsewhere, but just linger on in that area. Some of the things that we had happened during the investigation, or even before the investigation, when Chris and I first were given a tour of the facility, we walked through one of the main parlors that's a sort of display museum space now. There is a woman in black who is seen there. They believe she's one of the family's matriarchs. She's very protective of that space. She can make you feel very oppressed. And I will say, every time I walk into that room, I do feel very oppressed in there, like somebody's pressing down on my chest. She's not pleased with some of the things that go through that building. But when we were doing the investigation, I actually had my pair of dowsing rods with me. And that's not something Transcend usually uses. They rely more on electrical equipment, K2 meters, EVP recorders, those types of things, periscopes. And so the ghosts seemed to enjoy the fact that there was something that was not electrical that they could play with and make move, and were able to answer yes or no questions using these rods. And what we discovered is when we were talking about the slave rebellion, Gabriel's rebellion, some of the slaves that were on that plantation had a connection to that, and the matriarch there did not want to talk about it. She was not pleased that there were some displays in that room referring to that time of the history of the tavern. Above there, as you go up the stairs, you go up into some office spaces, and there's also a couple of parlors where brides will get ready for weddings that are held on the location. And there is a gentleman named Tom who hangs out in the parlor that the brides get ready in, and he gave us some activity as well. And there's a woman, or a young girl, I should say, out in the hallway. She's in one of the other rooms, but she will occasionally come out into the hallway. The first time Chris and I were given a tour up there, our guide, Steve, and myself heard her actually tell us to leave. Steve and I both looked at each other and were like, "You heard that?" And he's like, "Yes, I heard that." And Chris's like, "Heard what?" Chris doesn't have experiences.
Ghosts don't talk to me. I like listening to stories about the ghosts. I like to tell stories about ghosts, but ghosts don't talk to me.
No. So yeah, it was quite clear to Steve and I, but Chris did not hear it at all. And so, you know, they hear footsteps out there. They hear her. She does not like it when investigators come into her room. So I don't think they actually open up her room during the investigation.
Sure thing. If there's a spirit that has a tendency to get a little nasty sometimes.
Yes, you like to respect their boundaries. You don't want to make them nasty.
No.
So, now Chris has got some stories from when it was the Barksdale. Did you flip by that? I flagged it. That's where it starts.
Yeah,
I'm logical that way.
Of course you are. Yes, I flipped by it. So, but yeah, the Barksdale Theater, you know, the building had changed hands numerous times, and come the 1950s, there were a group of actors who were, you know, kind of a little down on their luck. They were having some trouble finding some work, and they scraped some money together, and they wound up purchasing the tavern, and they turned it into what at that time was the Barksdale Theater. So, you know, over the years, they went ahead, and of course, they built quite the successful enterprise there. Mm-hmm. It's, you know, still a theater space to this day. As Beth mentioned, it's now actually part of a Virginia rep. But
yeah, I think it's Patsy Cline is being shown there right now.
I don't know. Have to look that up.
Yeah, I think that's the one that's right there.
But I'm not seeing the section where you flag.
Oh my god.
I'm hopeless.
You are hopeless. It's right here. This is the flag right here.
Flag. Oh, okay.
Starts right there.
Starts right. Okay. All right. So, one of the original founders, Muriel McCauley, she actually said that she can never say that she had ever seen a ghost in the tavern. She lived there for over 40 years, and they used to have seances there from time to time. She would say that the building is very old, you know. It has a wonderful atmosphere. You always heard something creaking or some other noise somewhere. In the early days, back in the 1950s, there was no heat and no plumbing, and a lot of the house was closed off, especially in the winters. We lived on the second and third floors, and there was a long, dark hallway. It was very conducive to the imagining of mysterious beings roaming about. But like I say, I never saw anything. I can tell you this. We used to hold seances there, and we used to sit around the Ouija board. It would spell out names, and sometimes that got scary. Nancy Kilgore, who used to live here, but is now dead, she used to say that she could feel the presence of Patrick Henry. She used to talk to him. But the only one I know who saw anything here was Miriam Simmons. At Halloween, a haunting candlelight tour is offered at the tavern, and it has been highly successful. Nearly 300 people turned out in 1994, for instance. They walked through the darkened rooms where Washington and Lafayette stayed and where Henry might once have drawn ale for customers before he took up the law. A highlight of the tour was the recounting by Miriam of her ghostly adventures. Miriam states, "Actually, I've had two very strange experiences at the tavern. I lived there for 10 years. I had always heard that a man was murdered there a long time ago, sometime in the 1800s, I think. I don't know if that has anything to do with it or not, but yes, I am known as a lady who has seen the ghost. I can remember the first encounter as clear as if it had happened to me yesterday. It was very frightening to me. It was a sunny day in winter. I was practicing the piano in a room we called the George Washington Room. It was a Sunday morning, about 11 a.m., I was mostly doing the scales when I noticed that the room seemed to get colder and colder until I got very uncomfortable. And it was not just the cold that made me feel this way. There was something else there was something else in that room. It was behind me. I sensed that whatever it was very angry, livid in fact. I kept on practicing, but I had the strongest sensation that it wanted me out of that room. It was almost like something was shouting at me to get out. I was afraid to turn around and see if anything was behind me. Finally, I finished playing and I left, but I was never comfortable in that room again, and I was very reluctant to enter it alone. A friend of mine said she had the same experience there. If there was an entity there, it didn't want me in that room. Whenever I went in there after that, I never turned my back to the door. Miriam says the second encounter, sometime in the late 1950s, was entirely different. This time she was asleep upstairs in a bedroom. The bed was set into an alcove. Something caused her to awaken. I opened my eyes and there was a dark-haired man in the room. He was middle-aged and he had on an old-fashioned brown suit that looked like it was from colonial times. His shirt had frills at the throat. It was a very vivid impression. I know I was not imagining it. He just seemed to stand there and looked at me in an inquiring way, like what was I doing in his room? I wasn't really frightened this time. It just seemed like he wasn't there to scare me. He was just there, like he was supposed to be there. What really stood out to me, Miriam continues, was that he was carrying a leather-bound book. It looked like an old book, and then suddenly he was gone. Later, after the realization of the vision had come to had time to set in, Miriam thought about it. You know, she says, this room was used by the old traveling circuit judges who used to come here about every 3 months or so. I thought maybe I could recognize him by looking at the old portraits which hang in the courthouse, so I went over and looked. I couldn't pick him out, but I'll never forget that leather-bound book. It was so real. It was like one of those books where they used to carry old deeds and official documents. Was it the spectral return of a lawyer or judge from another day? And what was the force or presence which created such a feeling of evil in the Washington room? And why was it present? The answers likely are locked in the antiquity of the old Hanover Tavern. Present-day visitors may not experience any direct manifestations from the beyond, but even if one is not physically sensitive, it is difficult to walk through the tavern and courthouse today without imagining hearing the spellbinding words of a master orator still mesmerizing his audiences more than 200 years after the fact. Our dear Mr. Patrick Henry.
Yes.
So with that, we're actually going to go and we're going to take a little swing out of the Richmond area. Of course, here in Richmond, we do have our haunted hotels, which I think we've discussed on the show before.
Quite a bit.
So we have the Jefferson Hotel has its spirits. We have the Berkeley Hotel, which, of course, has its spirits as well. And there's other stories to be told about the old John Marshall Hotel, mm-hmm. which is, well, not a hotel anymore, but an apartment building.
There's the Linden Row Inn.
Linden Row Inn. And, you know, there's just something to hotels that it can draw people in. I mean, they're like, they're variable, you know.
They're way stations.
But, you know, many hundreds and hundreds of people can pass through them, during a week, if not even sometimes during a single day for a larger hotel. And people come there. A lot of people are, experiencing, they're having good times or maybe they're having a little emotional strife. Regardless of the case, lots of energy swirls around hotels. And so it's very, of all the places that are going to be haunted, it certainly makes sense that, hotels could be amongst them. Mm-hmm. Heck, look at some of the most famous, horror writings out there today.
Oh, and the Stanley Hotel.
Exactly. You knew exactly where I was going with that one.
Because I want to stay there.
Yeah. So the Stanley Hotel up in Estes Park, Colorado, that'll be a discussion for another day. We're going to stay a little closer to home with this, but we are going to venture outside the confines of Richmond. We are going to go and just go a few hours across the state over to a location in Bath County called Warm Springs, out that way. And out that way, there is a location known as the Highland Inn. Where was it? Sorry.
32 or 323.
One,
I flagged it.
Yes, right. Yes, you flagged it. The book has so many flags in it, I don't know what's what. But so you go out there and you have this this beautiful building out there, out that way, and it's called the Highland Inn. It was formerly the Monterey Hotel, and it was built back in 1904.
Some of you may recognize it if you're a movie fan. Or am I on the wrong hotel?
Wrong hotel.
I'm on the wrong hotel. Sorry.
Wrong hotel. Yep. Yeah, no, not that one yet. We'll get there. We will get there. But it's a three-story wooden structure with wide veranda surrounding it, and it's on the Virginia Landmarks Register, called the Monterey's Principal Architectural Landmark. And it was at the time one of a number of such establishments erected to accommodate the thousands of visitors who came to that area in the summers to escape the oppressive heat and smog-filled air of eastern cities and to partake in the soothing waters of the nearby spas. It is said that early guests at the inn included Harvey Firestone and Henry Ford. Yes, Firestone Tires, and of course, Henry Ford, Mr. Ford himself. So this one particular place, the Highland Inn, once had a visitor in the 1930s that, when I first read this story, certainly raised some eyebrows. This gentleman is not an American by any stretch. As a matter of fact, he spent some time as an enemy of the United States. Back in the 1930s, Mr. Erwin Rommel, I'll get back to that, name might ring a bell for you, spent some time there he was a military man, and he was out there to actually study some of the mountainous warfare tactics of Generals Grant and General Lee during the Civil War. Spent a couple months out there before ultimately returning to his native Germany and ultimately becoming known as the Desert Fox, fighting for the Nazis in North Africa during World War II. So Rommel, you know, he is he's an interesting character in history. I dare not speak well of a gentleman that was a Nazi. But as far as Nazis go, he wasn't necessarily as loyal to the Nazi ideology as he was to his home nation. Let's put it that way. As a matter of fact, he was one of the ones that ultimately participated in the plot to try to assassinate Hitler during the midst of World War II. So him and Hitler were not exactly on the best of terms. So in the leading up to the war, Rommel was out there. He spent some time out there, and he absolutely loved it, as a matter of fact. It was, just a very, very calm and relaxing place. The scenery out there is beautiful. And, he, of course, became the field marshal during World War, but he did not manage to survive through the war. He ultimately wound up, after the plot to assassinate Hitler failed, he was given the choice to either go in front of a firing squad or to take poison and to pretty much kill himself.
What Chris Brett failed to mention is he was part of that plot.
No, I mentioned it. He was the plot in the plot to assassinate Hitler.
You missed that.
I did not. I mentioned it twice.
I'm sorry.
Anyway.
My bad.
As a result of the failed plot, Hitler obviously caught on, and Rommel was given the choice, and Rommel decided to go ahead and take the poison and to die that way. It's believed that he may have returned back to one of the last peaceful places that he had the opportunity to stay, and that was the Highland Inn out in the western part of Virginia. To this very day, it's said that, just outside Suite 25, which is where Rommel stayed, you can sometimes hear mysterious sights, sounds, and smells that just always seem to occur in that area. Every once in a while, people in the area will report hearing someone speaking a very soft German in a refined voice out on one of the verandas late in the evening. They'll also smell a very distinct type of pipe tobacco smoke, one that is believed that Rommel tended to favor for himself.
Which was a very rare blend, so it's very distinct.
But Rommel's German, he was very very well educated, very refined, rather soft-spoken, despite the fact that he was really he ultimately was kind of a larger-than-life individual. He certainly was very much able to take command, but the German that he spoke was not the the classic German that
not the harsh not, with the
yeah the stuff that people like to kind of make fun of
yes.
German speakers for
yeah.
So they'll hear somebody speaking in this very, very soft German, and they think that it very well may be Rommel having returned to Virginia, as I said, one of the very last peaceful places that he would have known before the onset of World War II.
Be curious to see if it really truly is him. I'd wonder if there's anybody doing any sort of investigations there, if they even allow it.
I don't know.
Might be something to ask some of our investigative team friends.
Yeah, but I did check, you know, all of these places that we're telling you about this evening, they are still out there and open today as bed and breakfasts and hotels. So you can go out and you can try to stay at the Highland Resort or Highland Inn out there in the western part of the state. And, you know, maybe you can have your own own experience hearing the Desert Fox during some of his late night musings out there. Now, as long as we're out that way, we're actually going to scoot over to another location that's out there, an area that was known as Hidden Valley. Well, actually, not the area. The building was known as Hidden Valley. It's in a part of the state that was surveyed by George Washington himself back in 1754, but the building actually came to be in 1851. It was originally built as a private home by Judge James Warwick, and just a few minutes just up the road from the hot springs that they have out there, warm springs, hot springs, and very close to the world-famous Homestead Resort. So, excuse me, you go out there today, and you can go find the Hidden Valley Resort. And it's an antebellum house that was the main prop for a Civil War-era movie, actually, Summersby, starring Richard Gere and Jodie Foster. That was filmed out in the area for about 7.5 months at one point. And Gere, it is said, especially enjoyed his time spent there as he is a lover of the outdoors. Now, the current people that are operating the place, they worked out a long-term lease with the Forest Service, since it is now in that Forest Service area, in 1990, and they opened their bed and breakfast after a few years. They said that it took them several years to complete the renovations, as the house by that point had been vacant for nearly 35 years. The last owner had vacated it in 1956 and just stood there on the market for a long time. The Forest Service did move in. They bought it up in 1965, but nobody actually did anything with it other than for a few stray cows just kind of hung out in the area. Over the years, critters went to go into living in there, and various other debris kind of, found its way in, and that, you know, didn't take long for the people who were leasing the place to figure out that they were really kind of in for quite the endeavor to get the place going. And while they were working on it, it also didn't take them long to figure out that they were not alone there. They know that there were other entities lingering about the Hidden Valley. And they would, you know, they would say that they personally hadn't seen anything, but a lot of other people had gone through the place, have told them that they had. Of course, that's kind of one of the things you get when you're a host or an owner of a place like this. You're going to have many, many other people coming through your residence, and some of them are going to possibly be a little more sensitive to the other side than you may be yourself. So, a number of the psychics come through there, and, based on some of the stories that were told, they think that they had three separate ghosts out there, and none of the entities in this case are particularly nasty or frightening. The ghosts are actually seem to be a little pleased that the owners, the leasers have come in and cleaned up the place and made it a reputable, respectable place again. That area, one of the psychics told them, there was a lot of things about the house and the history. That really the psychic had no way of knowing. She knew that it was there during the Civil War, and there was a large encampment there with lots of tents surrounding the building. And the psychic said that given some time, they would find some relics of that area there, of the war there, such as weapons and bullets and lumps. And of course they did, find plenty as they were out on the grounds, find plenty of relics like that along the way. And of the three ghosts that that they've been told about, she said one of them is Frances, the aunt of Judge Warwick, the man who built the place, and one is Eliza, the judge's wife, and the other is Rachel, and Pam isn't sure if she's related or not. But they have each appeared on separate occasions to the psychics. They said that the both the judge and Eliza died in the house, in the library, and that there's apparently strong psychic activity in the room. they've had family from the descendants of the Warwicks there, and they visited there on occasion, and they've also seen the apparitions. Some says they've seen wispy figures of a woman walking out of the spring house one day as if to get some water. Manifestations flared up during one of the filmings of the movies that happened there in 1992, and it said that one of the wives of one of the actors was really into parapsychology, and she said she just ran into Frances one day on the second floor hallway during the daytime. Frances was dressed in the costume of her day and appeared very upset with all the people, the cameras, and the lights in the house. She said that she would talk with the spirit and told it that all this was temporary and that they would be finished soon, and then the house would be quiet again. She sensed that Frances understood all this. So, you know, the ghosts were very happy, certainly, that they took the time to clean up and, you know, do something, you know, restore the house, but didn't necessarily mean that they were quite so ready to deal with the onslaught of people that would come thereafter, particularly the onslaught of people that comes with the filming of any major movie.
Oh, yeah, as we have seen in Richmond of late. When people move in for a movie, things get shut down very quickly and disturbed, and it kind of upsets us as for those of us who are living, and excites us as well for those who are dead. That's a whole nother bucket of fish that we're not going to get into. We're going to move over to Middletown now at a place called Wayside Inn. So this is on Route 11, just off Highway 81, a few miles south of Winchester and west of Front Royal, for those of you who have not been out there. On occasion, they serve pheasant at the old Wayside Inn in Middletown. When pheasant isn't on the menu, one can order everything from Virginia country ham to fresh-caught trout and catfish, with side dishes as old-fashioned spoon bread. Waitresses will serve you in 18th-century costumes carrying a tradition of feeding and housing the tired travelers that date back to 1797. In those days, it was known as Wilkinson's Tavern, and when the Valley Pike had cut through some years later, the tavern became a popular stagecoach stop, a relay station on the old Black Bear Trail, where fresh horses were ready and where bounce-weary travelers could rest and refresh themselves. According to an inn brochure, in the coaching days, there was a servant boy who would be sent to the nearby hill to sight an unexpected coach. When a cloud of dust appeared over the horizon, the servant waited anxiously, straining to sight the outline of the stagecoach, and hurried back to the inn to report its approach. By the time the passengers arrived, delicious hot food would be waiting, and they would dine and drink in comfort while the team of horses was being changed. During the Civil War, soldiers from both the North and the South marched and fought back and forth through the Middletown so many times that it confused townspeople as to just who was in command on any given day. The inn survived those treacherous times by offering comfort to all who came. The name changed to the Larricks Hotel after the Civil War, and then again later on to the Wayside Inn. Today there are 22 guest rooms and suites uniquely decorated with rare antiques, fine art, objects to art, and an interesting potpourri of memorabilia. There's also 4-poster beds with canopies and cannonball and acorn carved details. It was here on May 24th of 1862 that, according to the State Highway Historical Marker, in front of the inn, Stonewall Jackson attacked Banks retreating from Stroudsburg and forced him to divide his army. For a time during this period, the inn was used as a hospital. Although there are no records of exactly how many men lost limbs or their lives in the vicinity, a number of Confederate and Union troops fell here, including one colonel whose stone marker sits just off the inn's front porch. That undoubtedly is what witnesses, guests, and hotel workers alike have reported seeing the ghostly images of Civil War veterans milling around in the lobby on occasion. Oh yes, that's what people tell me, says the admirable Molly Clough, who has worked at the inn for more than 6 years. Some have said that they have seen the figure outlines of soldiers dressed in Civil War uniforms. Others have said they have just felt something, you know, like a presence here. There are also sounds, Molly adds. Of course, you have to remember this is a drafty old house. It's been an inn since 1797, but the earliest part of the house, the old slave quarters, dates back to the 1740s. Old houses have a lot of creaks and groans, but I have to admit, I have heard footsteps right outside the front door when nobody was there. I could never explain it, and that you have to remember that this place was a hospital during the Civil War. A lot of young boys never left here alive. They weren't ready for that. Molly is not the only employee to experience manifestations. A coworker who preferred not to be identified says she had seen shadows pass by the front windows at night. She was told it was just the reflections from the car lights going by, but she didn't believe this. There weren't any cars going by, she explained, and there were no people outside either. It was pretty eerie. A night auditor who has had the most dramatic encounter. She swears there's a ghost who talks to her when she works late at night here, Molly says. The auditor told one coworker in the inn that she felt the breath of someone breathing on the back of her neck as she walked through the ancient slave quarter section of the building one evening. She was reportedly pretty spooked by it. And Molly adds that sometimes at night she will be waiting for the night auditor to show up. It was then that I heard the footsteps. I first assumed it was the auditor, but when I got up to check, there was no one around. The odd part was that it was always precisely at 11:15 p.m. when I heard the footsteps. Molly and the others say that several guests have reported to them that they have felt something in rooms 22 and 23. They never said they saw anything. They just felt a presence, like someone else was there. There's nothing harmful about any of our ghosts, says Molly. I think it kind of gives the place an added charm.
Now, we do have one more, and I actually thought Beth was going to roll right into this one because we finished talking about movie sets.
I picked up the wrong book.
Oh, well.
But who here loves Dirty Dancing? And I'm talking Patrick Swayze.
The original. So that, if you did not know, was filmed here in the state of Virginia, and it's not too far from Christiansburg. It's a little up the road from there, but it's out in that part of the state. Again, seems to be a theme of the mountains and out the western part of the state this evening.
No, our mountains are beautiful. It's not a bad place to spend forever.
No, not at all. Absolutely gorgeous out there. So the Mountain Lake Hotel. The current building has been standing there since 1936, and it's built out of native sandstone. But it was there, they had other lodges and buildings there well before that, and it's believed that, some of the Native Americans may have even lived on that land out there even as long as, maybe even 10,000, 11,000 years ago. So the people have been inhabiting that area for quite a long time. Over the years, but the Mountain Lake Hotel, again, has been there since 1936, and as we said, it's probably most famous for being the hotel that was used as the site for filming of Dirty Dancing in the 1980s, and it was the building that's there today was built by Mr. William Lewis Moody. And it's said that Mary Moody, who is the daughter, inherited the property when her father died. And again, upon her death in 1986, her endowment took over the ownership, forming a nonprofit foundation that holds Mountain Lake as an asset. This annually contributes to scholarship funds, grants, and other nonprofit organizations. And today, one can still visit there and enjoy the unhurried elegance and splendor of a time long past. And quite possibly, one might well meet a representative spirit of that time. For one thing, the Mountain Lake in the 1930s had an unwanted reputation as the suicide center of Giles County. The country then was in the midst of the Great Depression. Old-timers in the area say some guests came to the hotel, enjoyed a great meal in the ornate dining room, and then, unable to face their loss of fortune, did away with themselves. There still are certain areas of the hotel, especially a group of luxuriant rooms with jacuzzi baths and elegant appointments that maintenance workers and other staff members are reluctant to enter. You hear noises down there, one said, and you get this really strange feeling. There is almost a reverence about this section. You find yourself whispering when you are there, like you are in a church or a library. There is one end of the hall that is especially creepy. The lake also has had its fair share of tragedies. Drownings a few years ago, a couple was staying at the hotel, a man and his wife. The woman was a sensitive, and in the middle of the night, she reported that someone else was in the room. There was a spirit standing by the window looking out. The apparition communicated to the woman that her son had drowned in the lake, and she was there waiting for him. Many employees believe the ghost of Mary Moody Northern, the former owner, the one who had died in 1986, she is still present. She was a domineering, hands-on employer who oversaw every function of the hotel, virtually causing workers to tremble in fear in her presence. A large oil portrait of her hangs prominently in the library above the fireplace. Even today, it frightens some who enter the room. Employees say her eyes follow you wherever you go in the room. She is watching you, making sure you are doing your job properly. One who has experienced this and other psychic activity is Eric Wolf, who was interviewed a few years ago by Julia Everett for a paper she was writing on an area folklore for a class at Radford University. Eric at the time was dining room and banquet manager. He told her that one night he was closing up one of the lake houses, part of the hotel property, at the far end of the lake. He turned out all the lights and locked the place up. As he was leaving, he said he got a tremendously creepy feeling that someone was watching him. He knew there were no guests in the house and no one else was around at such a late hour. He said he looked back up at the house, and in the upper right-hand window in the lower level, he clearly saw the face of an old woman peering out at him. It shook him. He said he was totally unprepared for that. He thought maybe it was just a weird reflection in the glass, maybe from a streetlight, so he walked around. But the image didn't change. Wherever he went, he still saw the figure. Eric said it was still looking out when he left. Later, on reflection, he wondered if a fellow worker had somehow gotten into the house and was playing a trick on him. He recalled that light had seemed to be illuminating the face, but there was no shadow or silhouette. He had seen a light shape, but not a dark one. A couple days later, he took a friend back to the house with him, and they looked inside. There was a couch right in front of the window. If someone were joking with him, they would have had to have moved the couch to create the image of a face at that height in the window. And he wondered how had the face been lighted. There would have had to have been a candle or a lamp in front of her to create such an effect, or had the light emanated from the woman herself. Eric became convinced that it had not been a trick, that he had been seeing something from another world. A year later, Eric saw the same image in the window. He had been in the house minutes before, locking it up for the night. No one was there. There was something there, he said. I don't know what it was. I can't explain it, but I know what I saw. There were other encounters with the unexplained. Once, when Eric was living in the hotel in the off-season, when it was empty, he and his then 3-year-old daughter were making the rounds, locking up doors. They were in a long hallway off the lobby, and Eric was holding Emily in his arms. She was facing the opposite direction from him when she suddenly got a puzzled look on her face and began staring at something. Eric asked her what it was that she was seeing, and she pointed towards the dining room past the lobby. He looked around but didn't see anything. Then they walked through the lobby towards the dining room where she was pointing and came to a glass door. She told him she had seen the face of an old woman with long hair. She said the woman had been looking straight at her. On another occasion, Eric and a fellow employee were cleaning up in the dining room at 1 in the morning. After everything was quiet and all the other workers had gone home for the night, they walked into the kitchen. They then both heard a strange noise. It sounded like a cart full of dishes were being pushed across the floor in the dining room heading towards the kitchen. They could distinctly hear the dishes rattling in the cart. Curious as to who it was, they peeked out a window in the kitchen door. When they did, the noise stopped. There was no one in the dining room. A number of employees at the Mountain Lake Hotel are convinced it is the spirit of Mary Moody Northern who makes her presence known, seeing to it that the place is still being properly cared for. Maids say there are certain upstairs rooms where doors open and shut by themselves, and there are definitely cold spots. And some hear a woman walking down deserted hallways with a cane, but they see no one. Miss Northern used a cane. The unexplained sights and sounds combined with the haunting history of Mount Lake itself provide ample cause to give one, as Eric says, a really creepy feeling here.
So who wants to go on a road trip?
Yay, haunted hotels. We love haunted stuff.
We've
stayed at a couple places that have had a reputation for being haunted.
Yes, and I definitely want to get to a few more. I wouldn't mind going to the Mountain Lake.
Yeah.
I've always wanted to go up and see that camp.
Now, big caveat about Mountain Lake. It is still open, but the lake is not always there anymore.
Yeah.
They had some sort of...
They have a really weird geological thing there.
Yes, and that combined with what, you know, some people say might be part climate change caused the lake to really...
To drain
down to a tiny little pond. Occasionally it does fill part way, but it's nowhere near the grandeur that it was even just a couple decades ago when, you go watch Dirty Dancing, you'll see the lake full of water. But if you go out there today, you will oftentimes see a vast field, kind of a vast depression in the earth with a tiny pond at the far end of what was once the lake, far end from the hotel. So not exactly the Mountain Lake Lodge anymore.
But as we mentioned, this is a weird geological. If you search it, it'll actually explain it, and it's on a cycle, and it drains and it fills up, and it drains and it fills up, and it takes years to do this. It's a weird phenomenon.
I did look on Google Maps, and the latest imagery that they had from that area, it shows that when the pond is, or the lake is just about empty, just a tiny little smidge of a pond at the far end away from the hotel. So you could still go up there. You can still enjoy the beautiful scenery, but don't.
It is a gorgeous place to hike.
Yeah, but don't necessarily count on being able to go for a swim in the lake.
That actually reminded me because my grandparents belonged to a camp that was very similar to what was shown in Dirty Dancing. And I've always enjoyed seeing those beautiful old buildings. And, of course, the scenery where they're located is absolutely gorgeous up in the mountains area. The one my grandparents went to was up in the Poconos. So I'd love to go see a similar one here in Virginia.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so there's that. There's Stanley Hotel.
Oh, yeah.
And let's see, before we started the show this evening, we were watching some TV, watching some of the haunted shows on TV, and they were talking about a haunted hotel.
The Crescent Hotel in Arkansas, up in the Ozarks.
Yeah, that one. They had a couple of them on them, mm-hmm. because they were also talking about the one down there. Name's escaping me. It's in Savannah, but it's on the main drag there in Savannah, the old hotel that's there.
The pink one?
No, it's an old brick building. But in any case, haunted hotels everywhere. You can find the stories all over the place.
Yeah.
Although
one of our guides actually stayed in one in Savannah near Lafayette Square, actually, I think it was.
Yeah.
She was diagonally above and over one room from the room that's supposed to be really haunted.
Yeah, from what I understood, that room is actually booked out
several years in
advance. On Halloween night. I think that they are booked like 7 or 8 years in advance.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, some owners, they will...
they will take full advantage.
They have to take full advantage of the ghost stories. Other ones,
not so much.
Like, for example, if you go into, like, the Jefferson start talking about the ghost there...
They won't always talk about it.
Yeah, it depends on who you're talking to. I mean, some people are open to it. Some people are not.
Now the concierge will tell you stories. We have gotten stories from them. They'll let us know when people randomly check out at 3 a.m. because they've awoken to see somebody floating above them. And they didn't care for that, so they got out of Dodge. I don't blame them. I see a ghost floating above my head while I'm half asleep at 3 a.m. I'm going to be getting out of Dodge, too. Preferably not screaming and waking everybody up in the same hallway.
Yeah. But on the flip side, you can go down to the Berkeley, for example, and mm-hmm. We've actually even done our pub crawls inside the lounge there at the Berkeley before, and that the people at the bar and in the rest, they've heard our stories. They're very much well aware of the stories that we tell about Mr. Voorhees and Jane.
Miss Jane, and actually we got a new one just this fall from a woman who was staying there with her daughter during VCU family weekend, and she was telling us about a new ghost that was on the second floor. So we're starting to work that into our Capitol Hill tour.
Yeah. So there are spirits all over the places. Lots of many, many, many haunted hotels. We stayed at the one in downtown Gettysburg.
Oh, yeah, the not Jenny White House. It's inside of the Jenny White, the Tillman House.
Tillman House. It's just up the street from the Jenny White House.
Yeah, that one you hear racing footsteps in the middle of the night as they're descending down into the basement where they sheltered in place during one of the battles that happened, or the shootouts that happened in Gettysburg. And this is one that was actually featured on Taps, and they tried to recreate that in costume to see if they could trigger anything. We unfortunately did not hear anything when we were there.
Yeah, it was very quiet the night that we were there, but it is what it is.
Yeah, it was a cool place to stay.
Yeah. So, anyways,
and your parents
ahead.
Have stayed at that other one.
Oh yeah, the inn at Hare Ridge.
Yeah.
And they stayed next to. They stayed next to the room that was reportedly very haunted.
Yep.
Which was room one, right?
Yep.
Yeah. So, in a Hare Ridge, it's just on the outskirts of Gettysburg. Beautiful place.
Yes, we need to go stay there the next time we're in town.
Yeah. But we need to start wrapping things up. We don't have any opportunity to go look overtime tonight. Our friends at the Freakin' Awesome Show are not going to be on tonight, unfortunately. Angie is feeling a little under the weather, and they were actually planning on doing a Facebook Live event tonight, which they have put off until tomorrow because their whole thing, they are going to be
cooking live.
They are going to be doing a Thanksgiving dinner live, and so check them out on Facebook. I'm sure that they'll be posting updates on their page. It's the Freakin' Awesome Show.
Mm-hmm.
Look them up, and hopefully Angie will be feeling well enough for them to be able to do their show tomorrow evening. But tonight, it's just us, and the internets are going to kick us off here in just a couple of minutes. So we just wanted to take the opportunity to say thanks for tuning in tonight, and we hope that you all have a very, very happy Thanksgiving this coming week. And
lots of time with friends and family, and however you choose to spend your holiday, we'll be decorating.
We'll be decorating. We'll be telling stories.
Yes.
As I said before, there will be ghost tours Wednesday, Friday, Saturday night. And if you want to come grab a beer with us. Or talk about
the history of beer in Richmond.
Yeah. Or a beer or three with us, actually. You can come join us on Saturday, right around lunchtime, middle of the day. So, we'll be around. Then we're taking a brief little vacation for ourselves, and stay tuned. We'll have
more to-dos and things that we're doing. Of course, we have our dinners coming up this winter, so we got to finish setting our dates for those.
Yeah, so December is going to be a fairly quiet month for us, but we'll be around. I'm sure that we will be doing our radio show at some point next month.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know. We've
got to figure out the day because it's supposed to be...
It'll be either the 23rd or the 30th, I guess?
Yeah.
So we'll figure that out. It'll be all over the internet, all over the Facebook once we get it figured out. So
until then, this is Beth.
And this is Chris, and we greatly, again, appreciate you... joining us tonight, and
happy Thanksgiving, and we'll see y'all later.
Yep, we'll chat again soon. Good night, everybody.
positively.